It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
Here's a 3-1 pitch to Bautista, and that is hammered deep into left field, and the lead has been cut in half. Wow, what a bomb off the bat of Bautista to make it 2-1. Here's the 0-1. That is hit down the line and left into the corner, and this game is tied. It's a 3-3 game here in the eighth inning, and Bautista's got two tonight. And he finally breaks through with the long ball here in this ALCS two times. And it's 3-3.
It's At the Letters for Tuesday, October 27th in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. My name is Arden Zwelling. I am joined, as always, by Ben Nicholson-Smith. We are, as always, on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe if you've been listening to us for the whole season and you haven't done that yet. I don't even know what to say to you. I'm frankly just disappointed. I'm like Alex Anthopoulos. I'm not upset. I'm not angry. Just disappointed.
Yeah. After all those reminders, it feels like it's a weekly reminder, you know?
Subscribe, it is. That's legitimately like. What it is. Literally a weekly reminder. I say it every single week.
Maybe twice a show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I say it pretty much as a lot. Whenever I don't know what else to say, I just kind of fall back on that.
And then solid fallback.
Do the mental framework of what to say. Hey, what can we say? This is a sad edition of the At the Letters podcast because the Blue Jays season is over. What, you know, this incredible, improbable, kind of out of nowhere in, you know, at the end of July season is now over. It's behind us. How are you feeling about it?
I feel like we picked a good season to start a podcast.
Yeah. If it was like one of those like lost seasons where they just kind of like win 78 games or whatever, yeah, it would have gotten a little tiresome around September.
Oh man, I think even August, like some of those years you're already looking ahead to who's going to be, like the stuff that now we're talking about with qualifying Estrada and, you know, who's going to be the best, you know, minor league free agent you can sign for the bullpen. Like that's the stuff that we would have been looking at in August.
Right. Yeah. And that's the stuff that we're looking at now on October 27th. That's crazy, actually, that's October. I don't, like, Halloween is this Saturday. And like to me, mentally, it's still like October 1st, you know, like I feel like the last month is just a blur.
And, yeah, lost track of all time.
And that's being like somebody who like is employed to cover the team. Like if you're like as a fan, like I can't imagine what this month was like if you, because, you know, like when you're that close to it, like you don't get as emotionally invested in it. Like, you know, you still obviously like feel the things that are happening around you, but I don't think that you get as invested in it as a fan. I can't imagine what it was like being a fan for the last month. It must have been wild.
Yeah, I get the sense that it was exhausting, like super exciting, probably expensive for anyone who's going out to watch the games at restaurants or bars or anything like that. I mean, it's really been a crazy month. Like, who knew that we set the over under at what, one playoff game basically?
The over under was half a playoff game basically,
and they played 11.
Yeah,
you know, like that's nuts.
No, yeah, and then but also like 11 games isn't that many in the grand scheme of things. So you think about, they played 162 throughout the regular season, and we were we pretty much watched all of them. 11's not that many.
Wilner, I think, tweeted it. That it was 32 spring games, 162 regular season, 11 spring training games. Like, that's more than 200 baseball games this year. It's a lot of baseball.
When you think about, like, a guy like Kevin Pillar, who played, like, 159, like, Josh Donaldson played 158 for, like, the third straight year, plus all those spring games, plus 11 more in the postseason.
All-star for Donaldson.
Yeah, Donaldson went to the All-Star game, hitting the Derby, like, and he was like sick as a dog at that point too. He had to leave that game in KC right before he went because he was so sick. He had that like stomach flu that went around the team. Like that's a crazy amount of baseball. Like
it really is. Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. It really is.
Every single day.
You kind of hear people talk about it in the spring. It's okay, you know, we're preparing for the grind, but you know, it doesn't necessarily fully click in until later on in the year. And then by the end of the season, you know, I do think that some guys are going on fumes at that point.
Oh, absolutely. And Kevin Pillar especially, like this year took a lot out of him. Like honestly, like I think that he was very mentally, emotionally, like physically drained at the end of this season. Because that's a guy who hadn't done it before.
Right.
Josh Donaldson, this is his third straight year playing that many games. Like he knows what to, you know, he's very like, he is kind of the consummate professional in that way. Like he knows how to prepare his body and how to be productive and you know, throughout. But so, for some of the guys who hadn't been through it, and some, you know, and Josh talked about this, some of the young players who played in the postseason for the first time this year, you know, Kevin Pillar, Ryan Goins, what have you. Like some of those, you know, some of that experience is invaluable.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And that's going to set the Blue Jays up, you know, as they look ahead, which now is what everyone's doing really. And you know, if they go into 2016 with a bunch of guys who have this experience, you'd think that can only be a good thing. I mean, the fact that the Mets and Royals and Blue Jays and Cubs were the final four teams, I think should remind everyone that experience is only part of the equation. These are some young teams. Mm-hmm. The Cubs have all kinds of rookies. The Blue Jays have some inexperienced guys, and yet they got here and they performed. So really it's about talent, but I think experience is a nice bonus, and now the Blue Jays have that.
Absolutely. Josh Donaldson talked about how you learn a lot about yourself in a very short amount of time. You think about, you know, Aaron Sanchez pitched in almost every single game. Roberto Osuna on the mound closing for, you know, the Blue Jays in the postseason. And like when you kind of think about this kind of trend in the MLB, and not to go too big picture on this, we'll talk about the Blue Jays, but like, you know, this trend in the MLB lately of like these long, you know, suffering franchises who have like made the postseason. You look, you know, Pittsburgh, the Cubs, the Mets, Blue Jays, Houston, Kansas.
Even the Nationals.
The Nationals, Kansas City. How many of those teams like make the postseason finally and then go on and win in that first year? Oftentimes they have to come back. KC has had to come back. The Pirates have been three times, each of the last 3 years, and I do not believe they've made it past the DS. I think they've lost two wild card games and lost in the DS.
Yep.
And like that's a good club. Like that's a club that won almost 100 games this year. You know, like how many teams, you know, the Mets are kind of the, you know, they're trying to like buck that trend. And I think most people would bet that the Royals are going to beat the Mets.
Well, you mentioned the Pirates, and I mean, they've had seven playoff games now to show for their three playoff appearances.
The Blue Jays had more in a year.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's why winning that playoff series was big. And, you know, they didn't get to where they wanted to go. And so ultimately there's a lot of disappointment. There has been a lot of disappointment in the last week, but I do think that at some point that's going to transition to a sense of accomplishment, not only for the Blue Jays players and front office, but I think that fans can bask in that sense of accomplishment too, having watched a team that was legitimately good and did win a division and a playoff series.
It would have been remarkable if the Blue Jays were able to, you know, in this, their first time in the playoffs, 22 years, go on and win a World Series. Cause it's like, that would have been remarkable. And yet, if there was ever a team that you thought could do it, I feel like this is the one.
They're really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were a really good team. And, you know, it seemed within their grasp in that game six. So many different opportunities. We could talk about the 0 for 12, relive every miserable at bat if we wanted to from game six. But, you know, I think that it's maybe just enough to say that they had the talent to get there. You know, it wouldn't have been a surprise if they had advanced to the World Series, even after being down 0-2 in the ALCS.
That's the kind of the cruelty of playoff baseball. I know we've talked about this a lot, but it's really a crapshoot when you talk about 11 games. I would make the argument that when, like, this is, like, you know, like, the Blue Jays put up an AL East, 2015 AL East title banner this year, and a lot of fans are like, oh, like, you know, of course, like, rushing to celebrate, whatever, da-da-da-da. Well, no, like, winning a division is way harder than winning the World Series, I think. Winning the division, that's a much truer test of how good of a baseball team you are than winning a World Series. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, well, I think that, yeah, I think it says something different about your team, right? Like, if you win the World Series, it means you won a baseball tournament in October.
Yeah.
But if you win a division title, it means that over the course of 6 months, you beat the competition. And that's a tough thing to do, especially when you're in a division that maybe doesn't have other powerhouse teams, but there's not an awful team to be found. There's no Philadelphia Phillies. There's no Rockies. There's no Cincinnati Reds where they're starting a rookie every day. I mean, the AL East is and was a tough division for anyone to compete in.
The worst team in the AL East this year was the Boston Red Sox. They were only six games below 500.
Right.
They won 78 games.
They finished strong. We saw down the stretch. I mean, that's a team that's going some places.
And so it's like to win that division, I think, is much more significant. And a lot of fans aren't going to be happy with that because you want the World Series and you should. But I think that you need to feel really good about winning that division. Honestly.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, hey, let's, you know, look back at something you probably don't feel good about. Game six, ALCS, a game the Blue Jays very much could have won. A game that I think was right there for them. You know, Alex Anthopoulos kind of, you know, someone asked him yesterday, do you have any regrets? He's like, oh, you know, could have used a hit, and, you know, with a man on third in the ninth, you know, 0 for 12 with runners in scoring position. And they in the first two games of that series that were in Kansas City, they were also very bad with runners in scoring position. I should look up that stat before we started this.
They weren't scoring,
but
no,
I didn't.
Bottom line, yeah.
They weren't. And so that, you know, and you can point to a lot of things, and yet Despite being 0 for 12 with runners in scoring position, the Blue Jays still got themselves to a position in the ninth inning where they, you know, a sac fly, an out, you know what I mean? Like, the infield was so in that ninth inning that, like, they could basically touch Ben Revere's bat, right? Like, just any kind of contact was going to get a ball through.
The little Ben Revere bloopers that we've seen, you know, a Deonna Navarro opposite field single, a Ryan Goins, you know, nubber that you can't turn a double play on. There's so many ways that could have unfolded differently. And you thought too, I mean, with Dalton Pompey stealing a couple bases, you have a couple runners on. How often does a team steal three bases in an inning and not score? I mean, it was just so many missed opportunities. You can look at this in so many ways, right? You can focus on the called strike to Revere.
Yep.
And that's a big turning point. I mean, the difference between, what was it, 1-2 and 2-1?
It was a difference between, 1. I think it was a difference between 3-1 and 2-2, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a swing. Every ball and strike at that point is so huge. Yeah. But, I mean, ultimately, it's Wade Davis. He's a great pitcher. To me, the Royals managed to contain the best offense in baseball that inning. They did it enough in the course of that series. They earned it. I mean, they're a great baseball team.
You can almost argue that they didn't earn it.
All right, let's hear that case.
Like, you kind of are, because they got the benefit of two, like, there was a strike call against Navarro, too, on a pitch that was outside. Both those pitches were high and outside. And, objectively, they were.
Right, and there's the home run call where there's a questionable,
An Amish man pulled the ball into the...
Apparently, he was not Amish. According to research,
a man with a poor beard pulled the ball into, you know what I mean?
Like, that much is indisputable.
Yeah.
Right. So, I don't know, though. Like, I just tend to look at it where I think there's not that much satisfaction to be found from looking at these calls and slicing them up and seeing how they could have gone for the Blue Jays as opposed to against them. I mean, ultimately, I just tend to think that the Royals played better. And I think that there's nothing wrong with giving credit to a team that's really good, a really talented baseball team.
Absolutely. A very resilient baseball team, a baseball team that came from behind a few times. And that, you know, you think about, so game two was the Price start where, it was like 3-0 going into like the ninth or the seventh, and then Price fell apart and they put up like a five spot in that inning and then added another one off Osuna or something, or add another one off Sanchez. They got a single off Sanchez. I think about that game, you know, that was a game where David Price looked like he was going complete game. You know, he looked like he was as locked in as you've ever seen him until suddenly he wasn't, which gets at kind of another thing that came out in the Tom Verducci piece, which is really, really good on SI.com. Read it when you're not reading your Sportsnet magazine. And it basically talked about the advanced scouting that the Royals put into the series. Have you read it? You look like you have not.
No, I've not read it. Tell me about it.
All right, get into it. It's so basically the Royals had an idea. They had had two scouts had watched the Blue Jays for like 2 months. And that's kind of the benefit you get in the postseason. When you kind of know the teams that you're likely to be facing, you can really hone in on your advanced scouting of them. So basically, the Royals had an idea when David Price was going to throw his changeup. Based on his breathing and his cadence, they kind of knew. And Verducci gets into some of the spots where hitters in pitchers' counts laid off of really tough changeups. And he's just kind of like, how does that happen? Or times that changeups got squared up. And he was just kind of like, how would they have ever known this was coming? And it had something to do with his breathing. You look at the play, I think it was Hosmer took off or someone took off from first base.
Hosmer, yeah.
Yeah, Hosmer. And they knew David Price wasn't going to throw over based on his foot positioning. Based on the way that he would put his foot down on the mound. David Price, not a single stolen base against him all season, right? You think about the Lorenzo Cain scoring first to home on a single to right field. They knew... Through advanced scouting, Jose Bautista, anytime he had a ball hit to his left, would generally grab it, spin, and fire straight to second base. This is, you must remember this.
Oh, no, of course. Absolutely. I remember that play. It's a huge play.
Yeah. And so they just kind of, based on advanced scouting, they knew Jose Bautista would throw the ball to second instead of hitting the cutoff man at first. So third base coach sent Kane, and I forget third base coach's name right now, and I wish I remembered it.
Gershell?
Something like that. Anyway, he knew based on that scouting report that he should send Kane in that situation. It was an absolutely absolutely risky send, and yet based on advanced scouting. That's why I asked Alex yesterday. I was like, do you feel like he got out advanced scouted? You know, like, are you concerned that your coaching staff didn't get this? And he kind of was like, oh, well, you know, there's a lot of that stuff in the game that doesn't get out. Like, this stuff just kind of got out. And you wouldn't want it out because, you know, it's competitive advantage. he was talking about how the Blue Jays had Johan Santana's pitches back in the day. And when you look at Johan Santana's numbers throughout his like prime with the Twins, the Blue Jays hit him really, really well. It's interesting. Went back and looked at it. And I was like, oh, yeah, the Blue Jays did have his pitches. But he also didn't really, like, I do think there is a part of the Blue Jays franchise that's just kind of like, oh, man, like, we missed some stuff here.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I think that obviously it's a huge advantage if you know that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, I tend to think that this stuff, teams think they have reads on other teams and they think that they have tells, and sometimes it adds up and sometimes it doesn't. And I wonder, like, if the Blue Jays had somehow gotten a hit off of Wade Davis there,
right,
would this story have come out?
Yeah. No, I wonder, right? It's a good point. I don't know.
And would it have been framed the same way? Like, I wonder if part of the reason that it's gained so much traction is because the Blue Jays didn't succeed in that big spot against Davis.
Right.
Not to say that there isn't validity behind that. I'm sure there is. I mean, Verducci, great writer, great reporter, yeah. so much to trust in that. But at the same time, I really think it comes down to the fact that Lorenzo Cain, maybe he knew that. Maybe that's why he made that corner. Or maybe he's just really fast and a great base runner with instincts, and he kind of got a glimpse out of the corner of his eye. And maybe the Royals, it's one thing to know a changeup's coming. It's another thing to actually be able to lay off or actually be able to square it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can tell you a changeup's coming, and no offense, but you're probably not going to hit it.
What?
Right? Like, these guys can hit David Price's changeup even if they know it's coming. So yeah. I think that to some level, yeah, it's great scouting, and it probably made a difference in a close series. But to another, looked at, viewed from another perspective,
yeah,
you could say, well, the Royals are actually just a really good team at making contact. So when they know something's coming, they have that bat-to-ball ability. They're not going to swing and miss the way the Astros might.
No, that's a fair point. And, you know, it is interesting how the results kind of affect history. You know what I mean? Like,
yep,
the winners, you know, it's like war. A winner gets to write the history books, right? So, you know, it's the same way. Like, the KC Royals won the series, so they get to kind of write the history of it. It's like, yeah, well, yeah, we knew David Price was going to throw his changeup. We knew Jose Bautista was going to throw to second base. The Royals don't win that game, they probably, you know, aren't whispering in Tom Verducci's ear.
That would be my guess.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. I will also say, though, that the Royals were excellently positioned defensively in this series. Rusty Koontz deserves a lot of credit with the Royals for, you know, the way that he positioned them. You know, you think about how many times the Blue Jays barreled up a ball and was hit right at a guy. It's because, you know, the Royals had really, really good reports on the Blue Jays' tendencies.
Yep. Absolutely. And I think we saw a little bit of that with the Blue Jays too, but I think more so the Royals were perfectly positioned, and that's probably because they looked at their data and they put those guys in the right spots. I mean, that could add up to a lot of outs in the course of a series.
The one that stands out to me was game six, fifth inning, I think. It was first two men walk, then two outs, and then Josh Donaldson gets to the plate against Ventura, and it was like his third time seeing Ventura. First pitch and like hammered it 114 miles per hour. It was tied for the hardest hit ball he had hit all season. Think about that. Think about how many balls Josh Donaldson obliterated into like the, you know, into orbit this year. And that was the hardest hit one. And Mike Moustakas just had to put his glove down. You know, he basically fell to his left, but just had to put his glove there and it went right into his glove.
Yeah,
and that was a moment with two men on base. It might have been hit so hard that it wouldn't have even scored a runner, like, because it was scorched.
Right.
The runner was coming from second. Like, maybe it wouldn't have, or maybe there would have been a play at the plate. But still, it extends the inning. It gets you to Jose Bautista, who was either going to face Ventura if Yost let him in, or, who, you know, Herrera, who would have been coming out of the pen. I don't even know who he would have gone to there. You like your chances, Jose Bautista at the plate.
Yeah.
Especially in this postseason.
Oh, man.
So I think about that one, about how Mike Moustakas was positioned. He wasn't guarding against the line. He was off the line and then just dropped to his left and
yep,
grabbed that ball.
No, it's true. And he was off the line against a power pull hitter in yeah, Donaldson. So definitely great positioning. And those are the kinds of things that, again, they add up in the course of a series.
Wow. So, you know, you think of, that's just another moment in that game where things could have gone the Blue, you know what I mean? Like, I just, The Blue Jays, like, I don't, like, the Royals are a really good team and they won and they beat the Blue Jays, but I really feel like the margin of difference in that series was really, really minute. Like, it was really small.
It was. And I think one of the things that I'll take away from watching this series is that it's so different watching watching the team that you've covered all season and, and watching it up close from that level. I guess every play seems to take on this huge significance in a way that, you know, watching Mets and Royals, it's going to be fun to watch that World Series, but it's different not knowing the entire backstory of players and just like knowing how high the stakes are for an entire organization.
Yeah.
You know what I mean by that?
A little bit, like just because you've been so like kind of immersed in. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different experience watching. And it's also the first time I've actually seen playoff games in person. And, and I think that has an effect too.
Yeah, I think it was different for me, and it gets to kind of what I was getting at earlier, because like I've seen behind the curtain, right, of the Blue Jays, so I know these people, like, and I know some of the personalities, and you know, you get to know some of the people on the coaching staff and the front office, and you get to like, you know, even just like casually talk with them in the dugout, like just not even about baseball, just about whatever, and you get to just kind of know some of them, and that kind of changes it for you a little bit.
Yeah,
I think
that's part of it.
Absolutely, 100%. What do you think, I mean, this season, like when you kind of, if you can, you know, take a big picture look at it, what do you think this season meant for the franchise, for fans?
Man, I think it's franchise changing, right?
Right.
I think so, because it's really, I think, made people look at the Blue Jays in a different way. And the Blue Jays are probably among those people who view this franchise differently now. That they have won the East, they have made the playoffs, won a playoff series, things that would have seemed almost dreamlike 6 or 7 months ago now become reality. And not only did they win, but I think along the way, they generated a ton of interest. And this isn't just, you know, Sportsnet speak. This is true. I mean, there's a ton of interest. You look at 12 million Canadians are tuning in for at least part of game 6 of the ALCS.
An average of 4 million people watched the rain
delay. The rain delay. Crazy.
4 million people watched rain.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that tells you, and you can see it too, there's tons of interest. The Rogers Center has been sold out basically for 2 months, 3 months straight. So it's a different experience now. Who knows where that leads? But I think that at the very least, the Blue Jays have a division title. They have won a playoff series. And they have an indelible playoff moment in Jose Bautista's Game 5 ALDS home run.
There's a couple things to that. So one, and I've heard Brent talk about this a lot, and I couldn't agree more. This was kind of the closest thing Canadians have had to like the Olympic experience. So you think about like 2010 Vancouver games, right? Like that experience was like totally like unifying across the country. You know, like everyone got involved in, you know, whether it was, you know, Bilodeau or, you know, the cold medal game or whatever, all that. Now you've got Bautista's home run, like you said, or you know Ben Revere's catch, you know, in left field. Like, he really was unifying. When you talk about 12 million people watching some part of that game, that's one in three Canadians, you know, like, and it really was a unifying experience, and you don't get that in this country for sports very often. Like, it's very, very rare,
or for anything, right? Like, that's,
yeah, maybe like elections, like, you know.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah. But it's not like everyone's tuning in for any one TV show.
No.
There's so much. Everything is so split.
Yeah. So I think that was really cool. And I think that, you know, for years, people have talked about like the sleeping giant fan base and how, you know, this team could bring people together, this and that. But like, we'd never seen it. And now, like, we've actually seen it. So I think, you know, I think that the Blue Jays learned something there. I think the Blue Jays front office kind of learned something about how they want to build a team. Like, and Alex Anthopoulos yesterday at his presser, like, really hammered home character guys, really hammered home, you know, a team atmosphere. You know, he started talking about a Blue Jays type of player, and I've never heard him say that before, right? And, you know, he actually even defined it, right? Like, you know, he was hardworking, team first, selfless, smart, good athlete, this and that. Like, he's like, it's all, you know, it's like the stuff that you've seen from the Cardinals, right? Or even the Royals to a certain extent, it's that kind of stuff that you've seen other franchises have success doing, building that team culture that I think Alex Anthopoulos and, you know, Tony LaCava, Andrew Tanish, all those guys in the front office really learned something about that this year.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And it's going to be the beginning of something, you know, one way or the other. Maybe it's the beginning of another drought. Hopefully not for the Blue Jays' sake, but maybe it's the beginning of a run where this team is legitimately contending. But I think that one way or another, this marks a turning point, a new start for the Blue Jays. This isn't a team that we're going to view the same in 2016 as we did in 2012.
I feel like it will feel different next spring, right? Like, I feel like it will, you know, even like, and you know, it's not, that's not something that's real, but like, it will feel different. Just with it is a turning point, like you said. Like, I feel like it's a new chapter.
I think so.
Yeah. And again, that's like not Sportsnet speak. Like, I think that as a fan, like, you have to feel that as well. They're like, all right, we got there. We got to, you know, for so long, the identity of this team was 22 years without a postseason, whatever, 18, 19, 20, 21 years, you know, and we don't get to the postseason. We're always just kind of good. You know, bad things always happen to us. A lot of really good things happened to the Blue Jays this year. Like, when was the last time there's a Toronto sports team that was that dominant, you know?
They're a great, great ball club. Even in games they lost, like, you know, you can look at game six and say it was a really tough loss for the Blue Jays. Absolutely. A lot of regrets, if you want to look at it that way. But at the same time, look at Jose Bautista hitting a game-tying home run in a crucial moment off of the Royals. The second home run in the game, the fourth of his postseason. Just what a remarkable postseason for Jose Bautista. And in a lot of ways, that will stand out, I think, for a lot of people as one of the big reasons that this playoffs was so memorable.
Yeah. Now, I mean, when they, you know, put Jose Bautista on the level of excellence, like, they've got two pretty huge home run highlights to play now, right? Like, he's got those moments. And you haven't seen those moments in Toronto for so long. You think about, like, the moments in, like, even just pull it back to Toronto sports, right? Think about, like, the memorable playoff moments you have. You know, Vince Carter missing that shot against the Nets, right? Or, you know, the Blue Jays collapse against the Bruins. You know, Kyle Lowry missing that shot, you know, against the Brooklyn Nets, right? Like,
Or individual accomplishments like Vince Carter's slam dunk or Carlos Delgado's four home run game, Roy Halladay's near no hitter in his debut. You could point to those ones, but as far as combining the individual and the team, like, Bautista's home run, I think, accomplished that because it was a huge moment. Both those home runs were huge moments for the team.
Yeah.
And, I mean, as individual moments, like you said, they're going to be the number one and two highlights probably that define his Blue Jays career, barring something in the future.
I think Vince missed the shot against Philadelphia, actually. That's what I was trying to conjure up. I can't believe producer Sam McKee wasn't in my ear about that egregious error. He just doesn't want to think about it, he says. But yeah, but like and maybe that's just me and my personality, but a lot of the moments you think about are kind of like sour ones, you know, like the kind of sour notes. Whereas now, like, you know, those were the biggest moments of this Blue Jays kind of postseason run, were those two home runs, and they both involved Jose Bautista.
What I'm wondering is, when they put the Bautista statue up outside Rogers Center, how are they going to do a separate one for the bat he's flipping, or how are they going to pull that off?
I don't know. Like, I think to a lot of people, that is kind of like, I wonder if that'll become kind of the indelible image of Jose Bautista, or if, you know, I feel like they'll do like the flex one, the flex thing he does after, you know, like after every with Eddie. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the bat flip is going to stick with people for a while.
The logistics of having a separate bat statue. Think about this.
It'll have to be Marucci branded.
Oh my God, he'll be wearing his jeans. He'll be drinking a booster juice. All right. So that's that. You know, good season, good fun. Turning point in the Blue Jays franchise. And yet there is uncertainty ahead. And yet we have already kind of entered into what is going to happen next, and we've already discovered there are quite a few questions. We will get to them and so much more when we come back on ATL.
I think the word pride is a good one. I think that's what everyone feels, whether it's fans, people in the organization. I think at every level, I think there's a tremendous sense of pride. I want to thank the fans. They were tremendous the entire year. Attendance hasn't been higher. TV ratings haven't been higher. It's the talk of the league. It's the talk of the players.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. It's Sportsnet.ca, iTunes, producer Sam McKee, all that good stuff. So Ben, yesterday, Alex Anthopoulos had his end of year press conference. Alex Anthopoulos is still employed by the Toronto Blue Jays. He's got the hours are dwindling on his contract, but he is still employed. What did you think of that presser?
Well, he certainly talked as though he was returning.
Yeah.
And as though he had very detailed plans for the Blue Jays offseason, as we would expect. But at the same time, that situation remains unresolved. And I don't think that we can assume that there's a done deal until there's a done deal.
There was a very awkward undercurrent to it. And that's the fact that Alex Anthopoulos has, like, I mean, you know, in the very definition of the word, you know, like 5 days left on it as a Toronto Blue Jay. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have a contract past Saturday.
Yeah.
So it's like there was, and you know, and he said he didn't want to talk about it. And he said that, you know, look, I told the Blue Jays I didn't want to talk about it during the postseason. Like, I just want, you know, I didn't want to take away from anything, this and that. But like, there's very much like a subtext to this of like, well, you know, this guy is talking, you know, he's up here talking about their plans for the offseason, what they need to do, some of the work that needs to be done. And he might not be here to do it.
You think he will be?
From people I've talked to, I haven't, Alex hasn't told me this directly, but for the sense I get is that it's not as sure of a thing that he comes back as some people might think. And that it might be even closer to like a 50-50 scenario. What do you think?
Right. I mean, I think that, I do think he's going to be back.
I agree. I think he'll be back, but I think that the potential of him leaving is a lot more real than people think.
Well, it's just been interesting listening to, say, Stephen Brunt on the radio.
Yeah.
He was on, I think, with Blair and Jerry Howarth last week and making the point that, you know, maybe this isn't a slam dunk, even though you would typically expect that a GM in a city that he really says he loves and with a franchise that recently came off a season that was very successful by any measure, you would expect that usually that would lead to a deal.
Well,
but we haven't heard one yet.
And I don't think that it's a hesitance on the part of Rogers. I don't think it's hesitance on the part of the Blue Jays. I think it's Alex. And I think he wants to figure out what his role is going to look like going forward. You know, you got a new president coming in, Mark Shapiro, who, you know, at first it kind of sounded like he was coming here to, you know, be a business guy. Now it kind of sounds like he might be coming here to be a bit more of a baseball operations guy as well than people had at first assumed. And so, you know, oftentimes, you know, those relationships don't always work when you have two strong personalities who don't have much prior history together and don't really have relationship working together and, you know, both wanting certain things. I mean, you know, it's too many cooks situation.
It could be, for sure. I do wonder at the same time, though, if, you know, both these guys, and you're right, I mean, they don't have a lot of history together, but I wonder if their separate histories of kind of being team players and working with other people and pulling that off successfully. I mean, Shapiro didn't get to where he is by being a lone wolf. Mm-hmm. You know, he's worked with committees in the commissioner's office. He's worked with plenty of people in the Indians front office. And that front office has really produced a lot of GMs around the game. And so he's a well-connected guy who has relationships throughout baseball and has found a way to sustain those. And Anthopoulos, too, he's obviously a very friendly guy and someone who's a people person in a lot of ways and who tends to get along with people. So I tend to, and this is my guess here.
Yeah.
This is not an informed opinion based on specifics, but I would guess that those guys would be able to get along.
I would guess that they'll give it a shot. That's what I would guess. And you don't know, right?
Like, you don't know.
You know, and Alex is a big chain of command guy, right? Like, he's very much respects the positions above him and he respects that, you know, who he reports to and that, you know, there are going to be times where a CEO or a president is going to have to say, no, we can't do this, whether it's for financial reasons or whatever. But I think that Alex and Mark Shapiro need to like sit down and kind of iron out how their relationship's going to work and how the chain of command is going to go and who's, I do think there needs to be one person who has final say in any organization. There needs to be one person who kind of drives the bus. And who's that going to be? You know, I think that's kind of up in the air right now.
I mean, is it up in the air or is it just Shapiro? I mean, Shapiro's coming here. He's going to be the president. He's the team president. I mean, isn't he that guy?
I guess so. But, it, you know, Alex and Paul Beeston had such an interesting relationship where, you know, Paul, with some exceptions, but for the most part, let Alex do what he wanted. And then, you know, Alex would say, hey, I think I can get Troy Tulowitzki. I think I can get David Price. And then Paul would say, okay, I'll take that up. Right. Like, you know, for the most part, Alex kind of got to operate the way he wanted to. And, you know, I don't know. I get the sense that maybe he feels like it's going to be different now.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that would seem to be one of the unknowns about Shapiro and Anthopoulos is how much of a role would Shapiro want or expect in baseball operations. So yeah, absolutely. That is one of the questions that maybe we really don't know the answer to yet.
And the thing is, you know, if Alex isn't going to be back, and I think Alex Anthopoulos will be the general manager of the Blue Jays next year. I think there's a very real possibility he isn't, but I think he will be. But if he isn't, Mark Shapiro needs to be ready to like hit the ground running like fast. Yeah. He's, you know, because he starts November 1st, you know, the World Series could be over by that point. If it's not, it'll be over within a few days. Yeah. And then you got 5 days with which to figure out a lot of stuff.
Yep, completely. And so at that point, either he's doing two jobs at once or he's leaning heavily on his assistant GMs, which, of course, you could do. Tony LaCava and Andrew Tanish, both very experienced. But, you know, it's tricky. And I think Anthopoulos is going to be back too. But anytime that you're a few days away and there's that uncertainty looming, you do wonder.
Right. And like you have to wonder why something hasn't gotten done with Alex yet, you know, like why a contract hasn't been signed. Like, are we all going to go back to the Rogers Center in a couple of days to do another presser with him? Like, why wouldn't they have just done it yesterday?
Maybe what if it's just the simple explanation that they really were busy with the playoffs and they haven't had time to sit down, and now they're going to sit down and they're going to get it done and everyone's going to work nicely together. Is that so far-fetched?
I feel like you could have done it the day, you know, the day after the end of the regular season. They had a little bubble there. They had a few days before the Blue Jays started the playoffs, when wild card games being played and there's little like off day built in there. Could have done it there.
Although you did make the point at the time, and I found it convincing, that Anthopoulos hasn't been the type of guy who would want to distract from the team with his individual contract status.
Absolutely. The point I made at the time was, like, I bet you there's an offer on the table right now, and I bet you that Alex Anthopoulos probably likes it. He just doesn't want to take away before they get to the postseason, say, hey, look at this great job I did, I'm getting a new contract, da da da, right? So that was my point at the time. But like, so why wouldn't he do, if that was the case, you know, yesterday, why didn't they? Like, why, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's too much here that just strikes strange, you know?
Yeah.
That's not a saying, strikes strange.
Maybe it will be. I know what you mean.
I think that just based on what we talked about, you know, Mark Shapiro's unfamiliar with this franchise, and I'm sure he's, you know, been doing his due diligence and doing his homework and this and that, and getting to know, you know, the minor league system, the players and this and that, but nobody knows this franchise from a baseball operations standpoint more intimately than Alex Anthopoulos. Nobody knows the reports, the medicals, this and that, more than Alex Anthopoulos. That's why I think Alex Anthopoulos will be a big asset to Mark Shapiro in his early days as president, especially since he comes in November 1st at a really awkward time in terms of like the MLB offseason, right? Because, you know, he comes in basically like I said, he's going to be thrown right into the fire. Like, things are happening. So that's why I think Alex Anthopoulos will be back, and they'll try to make it work for, you know, a year, 6 months, what have you. And if the relationship isn't working, then maybe Alex Anthopoulos leaves after that. But I think that you really need Alex Anthopoulos in this transitionary period. Maybe Alex Anthopoulos says, yeah, I don't want to be a part of that if I'm not going to have the power that I want.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that could definitely be the way it plays out. I guess I really just don't know how things are going to turn out. I wish we knew exactly what was going to happen here. Put it up on sportsnet.ca. But I don't know. I could see, I do expect Anthopoulos is going to be back. That's my guess. But, you know, there's still that uncertainty looming.
That's like, he just summed up like my feelings on life. Like,
yeah.
I wish I just knew what was going to happen here.
It'd be all right. Yeah. Be helpful.
Wouldn't that be a benefit to all of us? Well, all right. Let's talk about what the Blue Jays have to do, whether it's Alex Anthopoulos, whether it's Shapiro, who knows, whether it's Tony LaCava, who knows. But let's talk about what the Blue Jays have to do. I think that the biggest decisions they have to make are concerning Marco Estrada. Some people might think it's David Price, but I don't think so. I think it's actually Marco Estrada, because you have a very big decision to make on whether you qualify him. And the qualifying offer is probably just a little bit south of $16 million this year, I believe. And you have to make that offer within 5 days at the end of the World Series. And you offer him that, and you take the risk that he's going to accept it. And now you got $16 million in the books. Alex told me yesterday, he was like, yeah, if you're giving one of those out, like, you better be prepared to pay it. Like, you better be willing to pay it. Because the guy, when they qualified Melky Cabrera last year, they were willing to take him on for 1 year, $16 million. So you do that. Or and then when you do that, you get draft pick compensation back, or you don't. Either way, I think Marco Estrada is going to see what's available to him on the market. But if you qualify him, he's always going to have that in his back pocket, and that's going to scare away some teams if you qualify him from offering him a contract, because they don't want to give up the draft pick. Where do you stand on this?
Well, where do I stand on it? Is it what would be the right move for the Blue Jays?
I don't know. Sure. What would you do?
I would not qualify.
Really? Why not?
Because I don't think he's a $16 million pitcher.
Right.
What would you do?
I would qualify him because I think the Blue Jays will, and I would, because I think he's going to go to market, and I think that he'll, even if he has that draft pick tied to him, I think he'll probably get 2 years and 20 from someone.
Right, but...
And to him, 2 years and 20 is better than 116.
Why would that be better?
Because it's more money and more term. Because next year he could blow out his elbow.
He could. But I mean, so that's saying... Because if you think you're going to get 2 and 20, wouldn't you just accept the qualifying offer and then go to the market the next year and
but you,
presumably
no
get
certainty.
More than 4 million?
Next year you might not perform. There's no certainty.
Right. But we know these guys are confident in themselves.
They are.
But that you get to free agency by being confident in yourself.
Here's the other way I look at it. If you're Marco Estrada's agent, are you turning to him and saying, yep, the best I can do for you is 1 year, 60 million. I can't get you anything better than that. Accept this.
Yeah, no, it's true. But at the same time, 16 million is a lot of money. I don't think that would be lost on anyone, Marco Estrada included. I mean, this is, what did he make this past season? Let's see.
I don't know.
3.9,
really?
So that would be a 400% raise.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, I think most of us would take that.
I don't think that's the prism that he looks at it through, though, you know?
Maybe not. And certainly, expectations have risen steadily as this season has progressed and Estrada has continued getting results, as they should. I mean, he's been tremendous. He had a great season with the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
He's going to help someone next year. I really believe that. He's a good pitcher. Is he a $16 million pitcher? I don't know.
Do you feel that, what do you think the market will be for him? Because there's some interesting pitching on the, there's some like big names out there when you look at some of the guys that are going to be available. But do you think the teams maybe that lose out on them say, hey, Marco Estrada, he had a 3.13 ERA, two really, really good postseason starts, three actually, maybe this is our guy.
Yeah. And the nice thing about Estrada, I mean, here's the sales pitch on Estrada. He has pitched in two hitters parks. He has succeeded in spite of that. He has started pitching up in the zone and really succeeding with a tremendous off-speed pitch and his changeup. He induces a lot of weak contact. He has really had three of the last four seasons have been quite good. And he's not that old, 32. He should have a lot of good years ahead of him. So to me, he's clearly got a case for a multi-year deal. I think that you can look at him as someone who should be earning upwards of $10 million per season on a multi-year deal. Does that mean 4-52, kind of in that Ricky Nolasco ballpark? Does that mean something a little more modest in the Scott Feldman 3-30 range? I don't know, but I think that somewhere in that ballpark, you could have serious conversations with teams.
You could see like 4-52 for Marco Estrada?
I don't expect him to sign that deal, but I wouldn't be surprised if that came up as some kind of a comparable.
Well, then wouldn't you definitely qualify?
No, because I just think that there's a difference between where an asking price might reach,
right,
and where you can safely peg a pitcher's value, peg a player's value.
What do you mean? But can you just, what do you mean by that?
Say you bring up Ricky Nolasco as a comp, okay?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean a team's going to pay that.
Right.
So I think that could be one of the parameters of a discussion.
Right.
It doesn't mean that the market ends up valuing him as a $52 million pitcher.
Right.
Doesn't mean it won't, yeah. But I think that if you're talking about extending someone a qualifying offer, you have to be reasonably confident that either you value him at that level,
yeah,
or you're going to trade him with player's permission.
I think that, Marco Estrada could be in the 2 to 3 year at like 10 to 14 million as I think probably where he falls. Maybe he's worth more. Maybe, and prices are going up, right? Like with a lot of money in the game right now, TV contracts, yada, yada, yada. It'd be interesting. I think it'll be an interesting case study, especially in this market where, you got your Zimmermans and your what have yous. Like, you've got some great pitchers out there, Greinke, like some great pitchers who are available.
David Price.
DP.
Yeah.
Right? Some great pitchers, and maybe those pitchers eat up so much money that there isn't that much left.
Right.
It'd be interesting.
I think Estrada will do better than just a couple years and 10 million. I mean, I know that's the lower end of what you said. I think a 3 year deal,
14 per.
Yeah, something like that. I think that could be a reasonable deal. You look at what he did, and Scott Feldman, when he signed his deal, which I believe was 330. He was coming off a pretty comparable season, pitching for the Orioles.
Right.
You know, a lot of tough ballparks in the division and hadn't necessarily done it every single season, but had about 180 innings of solid baseball at that point.
That was last offseason? Two ago?
Yeah.
So 3-30 two years ago is now 3-38, something like that?
It could be in that range.
You know what I mean? Like, there's been some serious inflation since, I feel like.
Yep. And Estrada's hitting free agency at the right time. That much is clear because he is coming off a really strong finish to a really good season, and he capped that off with an excellent playoffs.
If you're the Blue Jays, would you try to re-sign him for what he's going to go for?
I'd try to re-sign him. I think there is mutual interest, and I would try to re-sign him. I think that, do you go 3 years? I don't know.
Right? Do you believe in Marco Estrada is what it comes down to. Do you believe? And if you look at kind of predictive stats, like, fielding independent pitching or things like that, they kind of say, well, Marco Estrada has relied on some very, very good, fielders behind him. He's relied on, a lot of fly balls that haven't become home runs. That said, the Blue Jays, I don't see their defense becoming poor all of a sudden. The Blue Jays have a really good defense, a really good outfield defense, really good infield defense. So there's, really good catchers. So there's, there's no reason to think that he can't repeat what he's done with Toronto. But then again, there also is reason to think that.
Yeah. Well, I think 2015 may end up being his career year, but I do think he's going to add value going forward as well.
But probably not at what you'll have to pay him when you're paying him for that year.
That's
right?
The risk. That's the risk.
So I kind of fall on the side of I would qualify Marco Estrada and let him go. And I think that it's a risk. You take the risk that he's going to come back 1 year at $16 million. But I really do. No player in the history of qualifying offers has accepted one.
Right. But partly that's because teams who have had these borderline players have declined maybe more often than they should.
Yeah, true. But I mean, it's hard to think of like a pitching comparable who got a qualifying offer off the top of my head that would be comparable to Marco Estrada.
That's the thing. Guys who are comparable to him haven't gotten offers.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And I think that's why I say the Blue Jays, I don't see it happening because the pitchers who have gotten qualifying offers are the elite guys.
Right.
And this is as great as Marco Estrada was for the Blue Jays this year. I don't think he's viewed as an elite arm.
Fair enough. So that's Marco Estrada. So I fall on the side of qualify him and let him go to market. You fall on the side of don't qualify him. See if you can get him.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't pay like the market price for him, probably.
Probably not. I probably wouldn't be the high bidder, but you never know where things go. Maybe he wants to come back to Toronto. Maybe there's a vesting option you can throw in there.
Right. Maybe you can get creative with it.
Yeah.
Kind of deal. I wonder if he would give even a bit of a discount to Toronto. I don't know. I don't know like how much of, I think he's a really smart guy, and I think he's a guy who like understands what his value is right now and understands what he's done for it over the last year.
You should cash in.
And I think that's exactly
Yeah. He had a great season. He's in a great position to make a lot of money.
As much as he enjoyed being in Toronto and loved working with Yari Navarro and this and that and like the team culture here, like I don't think it's enough for him to like take a discount.
I would tend to side with you on that one for sure.
Speaking of guys who aren't going to take a discount, David Price, if you're the Toronto Blue Jays, Alex Anthopoulos said, we're going to do what we can to get David Price back. We have interest in bringing him back.
So that has to mean the five-year policy's at the window, right?
Well, David Price,
it has to.
6-7 years,
yeah.
25 to 30 per,
right.
That's what you're looking at.
You can't have a serious discussion about David Price if you're only willing to go 5 years. So to me, that suggests that Anthopoulos expects the five-year policy to go.
Right. And I've spoken about my feelings on the five-year policy in the past. I think it's just PR, BS. Like I think.
You think, as in, you think it's real or do you think it's not real?
No, I think it's just a convenient way to explain how you won't spend money. Like I think that like when else, what other internal policy have the Blue Jays put out, right? Like what advantage do they have to putting that out there other than just, being able, when they don't want to go after big free agents, things like that. It's just an easy excuse.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Right? It really doesn't make any sense because you're just artificially limiting yourself. Not to mention that when you sign a free agent, years are the asset. Years are what you want. You're acquiring years of service. That's a good thing if you're an employer. So really the limiting factor, if you want to go down the road of self-imposing these limits, what you should look at is dollars.
Absolutely.
Because that's what's going to end up costing you.
Absolutely.
So I don't, first of all, I don't agree with the idea of self-imposing a limit.
Yeah.
Because you want to have flexibility. You want to be able to take the plunge on the right guy. But even if you do, it should be in dollars, not in years.
No, absolutely. Anyway. No, there's a lot of like, you know, if Marcus Stroman was like, I'll sign, or is it only free agents? But even still, if it's Marcus Stroman's like, I'll sign 6 years, $20 million.
Right. Like, that's a great deal. Exactly.
No, sorry, Marcus.
Oh, we have this 5-year policy. No, because in that case, you're getting 6 years. So that 6 years is a great thing. You know, you want that.
Yeah, I know. I've spoken about it in the past. I'm pretty sure maybe it wasn't on this podcast. Maybe it's talked about it on the radio, but I feel like it's just a way of explaining why, you know what I mean? Like why you don't ever get involved in those things. Like what other internal policy has ever been released, right? Like what would be the advantage to putting it out there, even if you did have that policy?
Right.
Anyway, that aside, David Price, probably 6 or 7 years, $25 to $30 million, depending on how you structure it. Like Scherzer money is what you're looking at. That's what the Blue Jays are going to have to pay. And the Blue Jays are saying that, like, yeah, we're going to be involved. You know, talk about a guy who, like, isn't going to give you a discount. David Price is going to, you know, max out and get as much money as he can.
I guess what else can Anthopoulos say?
Yeah.
Because he can't say...
He's a realistic guy, though, right? Like,
But he's realistic enough to know that whatever he says in the media is going to make headlines, especially when it comes to David Price. So if he were to say... We're not going to have any conversations with David Price. We've decided as an organization, this is not a player we can pursue.
Yeah.
If he says that, then that makes big headlines.
Yeah. No, I don't think he should be that strong on it. But like the fact that he's like sounds almost like hopeful about it is kind of like usually he'll say like, yeah, no, we'll have the discussion. Like we'll ask them. We always ask. We always call. Right. But then generally he like qualifies it with yes, but generally players of that ilk have gotten this much money and we don't know if that's great for us. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, it's weird that he hasn't. I just couldn't imagine. Like, that's so unheard of for the Blue Jays to sign a contract like that.
Well, I think we've talked about the fact before that the most expensive free agent pitcher signed under Anthopoulos was $4.5 million.
Kevin Gregg?
No, I think, I forget who it was. Cordero? It might have been Darren Oliver. I think it was like $4.5 million.
Didn't Cordero get
it could have been Cordero.
A year and eight or something like that. Like,
It was in that range.
Yeah.
But we're talking about really modest spending on free agent pitching. Of course, he surprised us last offseason, spent $82 million on Russell Martin. It could happen again. But I'm not expecting it. And frankly, I don't think it would be the right move for the Blue Jays.
If there's one thing that Alex Anthopoulos showed us last season with Russ Martin was that if he says there's one guy that we would go to this length for, right? And that's what he said when he got Martin. There was one guy we were going to go 5 years an 82 for, and he had to outbid the Cubs. Like he had to tack on an extra year to get him. He said there was one guy we'd do it, and it was Russell Martin because he checked so many boxes for us, right? Because of, you know, the pitch framing and because he was a good clubhouse guy, character dude, like all this, you know, good offensive numbers, this and that. Maybe David Price checks all those boxes and he says, if there was ever one ace pitcher that I was going to offer this contract to, maybe David Price is the guy.
And maybe that's true, but I still think if you're operating with about $130 million, which that's going to have to be our guess because the Blue Jays aren't going to tell us specifically.
Did they go 140 this year? I feel like they got up to 140.
It was reported that they actually were a little lower, although they obviously pushed that up at the deadline.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Anyway, that's the range that we're talking about.
Yeah,
if you're in the 130, 140 range, can you really afford to spend $30 million on a pitcher? I don't know if you can. I don't know if that's good business.
If you're 135, which is like right between what we were saying, 130 to 140, yes, $30 million is 22% of your budget.
Yeah, that's a lot.
On one guy.
I don't know. I'm just not convinced that that's the way to go. And David Price is a great pitcher. He's a $200 million pitcher. He's going to have a lot of good years ahead, probably pitch like an ace for somebody. But I think that somebody should be a team that can spend $200 million on payroll.
Right.
You know, I don't know if it's like, if you're the Cubs, if you're the Dodgers, Yankees, Red Sox, go for it. And if the Blue Jays decide that after all this success, they're going to raise their payroll to that threshold, go for it. But if they're still in that 130 range, I just don't know how much sense it makes.
It's interesting because you look at the numbers and you start trying to make them work. So you say, all right, you know, Mark Burley, $20 million off the books, right? All right, Dickey, exercise that option and Adam Lindham, right? So there's another $12 million. Oh, well, there's your 32 right there. And you start making that work. But then you're like, oh, wait a second. Like Josh Donaldson's going to get a massive raise. And soon we're going to have to talk about re-signing Edwin Encarnacion or Jose Bautista. Are we going to re-sign one of those guys? Are we going to trade one of those guys? Are we going to, what are we going to do with them? So, you know, there's going to be money needs down the pipe. If you want Josh Donaldson to finish his career as a Toronto Blue Jay, you're going to need to, you know, go into David Price territory with a contract, right?
Like, oh, for sure.
So there's going to be some serious need, you know, like at some point, if Marcus Stroman continues on the career trajectory he's on now, he's going to cost a lot of friggin' money. Like,
all these guys, even more modest raises, Brett Cecil, Ben Revere, Michael Saunders, they're all going to make money in arbitration, you know? And so the money that you think might just appear has a way of getting allocated to other places.
Absolutely. So it's like, and so that's why I kind of agree with you that spending that kind of money on David Price right now would hamstring you too much as an organization going forward, unless you were going to significantly increase payroll.
That's where I stand on this. And I really believe he's going to have a great season next year. He's an ace. He's just a tremendous pitcher. But I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily the fit for the Blue Jays. And furthermore, if you look at what Mark Shapiro has done when it comes to these ace pitchers, and you know, in his case, a couple of them happen to be left-handers as well. Not that that really means anything, but Bartolo Colon, he traded. Cliff Lee, gone.
Yep.
CC Sabathia, traded.
Yep.
And those led to really big acquisitions for Cleveland. They got guys like Grady Sizemore and Carlos Carrasco and Michael Brantley in those trades. And I think that those trades, the Blue Jays aren't going to trade Marcus Stroman, but I think that trade reflects an awareness on the part of Shapiro that frontline pitching will eventually deteriorate.
Especially when it's 30 years old, like David Price is, when it's thrown 220 innings every year for 6 or 7 years now, when it's a high velocity pitcher, like it's not exactly, David Price has some like guile to him, but like, you know, he kind of also lives and dies on a 96 mile an hour fastball. Yeah. Like what are the odds? And I think the Blue Jays really like his medicals. Like, I think they really like his, you know, how his body is held up and how he conditions himself. I don't think they would have acquired him if, you know, that's a lot of, you know, a lot of the worry with Johnny Cueto at the deadline was that, you know, is this guy hurt? Is this guy going to hold up? We saw that, you know, David Price was the much better deadline acquisition than Johnny Cueto was. If you're going to commit to this guy for 6-7 years, you know, elbows go. Look at Verlander, man. Like, you know, like Verlander, like he turned it around a bit, but like for a little bit after that big deal, didn't look so good.
Sabathia, Zito.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that these guys don't help their teams, right? Because all three of those guys have pitched in the World Series, I think, since signing their big contracts. So it's not incompatible with success. It's just, it takes away from some of the nimbleness that the Blue Jays have had and that they've tried to create. I mean, Anthopoulos has avoided these big, bad contracts pretty successfully, and it hasn't prevented the Blue Jays from winning.
So, in your world, Ben, so there's no David Price. Marco Estrada, you're likely priced out of that as well. Mark Burley's not going to be back with this team. Maybe we'll be surprised, but I really don't think Mark Burley's going to be back to this team. You can bring back Ari Dickey at $12 million, but there is a bit of a sense that maybe the team needs to move on from Ari Dickey. You got Marcus Stroman and Drew Hutchison in your rotation next year, and maybe Dickey.
Assuming you tender Hutchison.
Right? Yep.
Which I think they will, but you never know.
No, yeah, I agree. I think they will. But that's, you know, talk about a guy who could also benefit from a change of scenery. Drew friggin' Hutchison, come on down. So, you need to get some pitching then.
You sure do. You really, really do. I think Dickey's going to be back. I think he'll be back for his 200 innings. So that gives you a couple options there. Sanchez or Asuna, one of those guys could very well be in the rotation. Although questions surround both when it comes to making that kind of a huge role change. But I think you have to go out there in free agency, and I think you have to go out there on the trade market and get pretty aggressive. I mean, we saw Anthopoulos at the deadline get linked to guys like Carlos Carrasco of the Indians. Maybe it's time to revisit trade talks for guys like that. Controllable, high upside pitchers. Maybe it's time to get out on a free agent, but a second-tier guy, Wei-Yin Chen, Mike Leake. Are those guys worth a look? I haven't looked closely, but maybe they're worth looking at and signing for a few years.
There are a lot of starting pitchers in the free agent market, and I think that there is a theory out there that like if a lot of money gets eaten up in, you know, Price, Zimmerman, like Greinke, some of these guys, that maybe, you know, some of those second tier guys come in a bit of a bargain.
Yeah.
Maybe you can do that. So maybe you can operate in that realm of, like, you know, Doug Fister or, you know, whoever's out there, right? Like, you know, Matt Latos or whoever.
Take some shots, you know.
Right.
Maybe you acquire multiple guys. Maybe you get some guys on incentive-laden deals and you can cut them in spring training if they don't look good.
Right.
You know, I don't think that they're going to arrive in spring training with five aces. Like, the rotation that we saw in September and October might be the best Blue Jays rotation we see for a while with the amount of depth that they had.
Right. I do think that Alex Anthopoulos will try to make some trades. And I do, that's his, if it's Alex Anthopoulos. But, like, we have to qualify everything. But, like, that is how they generally, the Blue Jays front office generally likes to acquire their talents, through trade and through the draft. If you are, like, revisiting, like, the Carrasco thing or, you know, whoever else, I mean, you're going to have to give something up. And, you know, are you trading even more from an already depleted farm system? Are you getting into Connor Green and, you know, Sean Reed Foley and, you know, like, are you trading guys like that, Anthony Alford, to get kind of like these high upside guys who are locked up for a while?
Yeah. I mean, that's, or are you trading off the big league roster? Like, what would you, do you look at any guys on that big league roster and say, oh, they could potentially be involved in trades? Like, do you see areas of depth where maybe the Blue Jays could afford to part with a player or two?
The obvious area of depth is the outfield,
right?
But I'm just not, like, what's Ben Revere, what kind of starting pitcher is Michael Saunders, Ben Revere going to get you? You know, Kevin Pillar, like, what's that going to bring back, really?
I asked someone with another team yesterday, does Ben Revere have any trade value if he's making $7 million next year? And the answer I got was, well, maybe you could trade him, but you're not getting anything back.
Right.
Anything of substance. Like, you're not going to solve your rotation issues by doing that.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I don't know if there is really, like, if you wanted to trade off the big league roster to kind of solve issues, like, geez, like, I don't, like, you know, who, like, everyone's going to want Marcus Stroman. Everyone's going to want Aaron Sanchez. Everyone's going to want Roberto Osuna. I don't think the Blue Jays want to give up any of those three.
I don't think they want to.
So, I mean, you know, if you wanted to trade, like, a Troy Tulowitzki, you got to find someone who could take on that money, right? Or if you wanted to trade, like, a, you know, who, I don't know, like, you know, you think you're going to have to trade something that hurt. Like, it's going to hurt,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Whether it's one of the prospects you mentioned or someone off the roster. And we don't think they're trading too low, do we?
No, I don't think they are.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was just the first name that
popped. Yeah, no, for sure.
Like,
for sure.
You know, of, because I don't know, it's so hard to imagine, like, because if you don't, you know, what are you then talking about, trading Donaldson? No. Are you going to trade Jose Bautista? No. Edwin? Probably no as well, but maybe.
Like, and people bring those names up because the Blue Jays have so much power, and so you could think, and I get the line of thinking, you have power to spare, maybe you can move one of those guys. To me, I don't think you can trade Jose or Encarnacion because they're so good, and they're so good relative to their salaries.
Absolutely.
It's tough to get value back.
But then that's what other teams are going to want.
Right.
You know, like, that's what they're going to request. So
not
then,
to mention 10 and 5 rights for those guys.
Right. Yeah, that too. So now you talk about, all right, are we going to have to dangle Anthony Alford? Are we going to have to dangle Sean Reed Foley, John Harris? And it's like, well, we traded, you know, 2 million prospects this past year. You know, can we really afford to lose more? But the Blue Jays also have a window next year. Eddie and Jose, both on their last years of their deals, you know, Troy Tulowitzki probably not getting any better, pretty much in his prime. Josh Donaldson in his prime, you know, it's like they have a window to win right now, and they need good starting pitching. Every team needs good starting pitching to win.
Yeah.
You need 6 or 7 starting pitchers, really, to get you through the year, probably more. I think the Blue Jays used like 11 this year, something like that.
And that's on the good end.
A lot of those were Felix DuBrant, like, you know, like Matt Boyd, you know. So, you know, it's such an interesting offseason.
It is. And they're going to be going for it at a time that other teams are going for it, too. I'm not sure that there's any team in the American League that's actually going to say, oh, yeah, we have no shot in 2016.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
No one's tanking. There's no Braves or Phillies or Reds team to be found.
Oakland, maybe? Seeing.
Yeah, but Oakland always kind of tries to keep things relevant. They have enough talent that they should, you know, if you have Sonny Gray and Brett Laurie and Danny Valencia's over there powering that lineup, why wouldn't they try to go for it?
Yeah, fair. Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. There isn't really, maybe Tampa Bay, like Baltimore might move on. Like Baltimore might start rebuilding.
I don't think they're rebuilding. I think they want to win next year.
They've got, but they're, you know, if they, you know, Matt Wieter's gone, Chris Davis gone. I mean, they're having a lot of turnover.
They are, and it's going to be a different looking team and maybe a much worse team. But I still think they're going to make a nod in the direction of of trying to contend is what I mean. There's no team that's going the Cubs and Astros route. Like there are going to be bad teams in the AL next year. Some teams are going to lose 90, 95 games, but I don't think that they're going to enter the season with the expectation of doing that.
Yeah. So what do you do if you're the Toronto Blue Jays?
You get some pitching.
Yeah.
You're prepared to spend prospects, big leaguers, dollars.
So you would go all in on, like, you would sell some prospects. You'd be okay with that.
Yeah. Wouldn't welcome it.
Yeah.
Maybe you get some back in another trade. You find a way to make it work. But
right.
I think if the value is right, if you're getting an elite starter and you're giving up a prospect that you think is good but not amazing,
yeah,
you have to do that.
I wonder how different this major league roster will look next year. Like, we know there will be different arms in the rotation, but I feel like in order to get, like, arms that you really want, maybe somebody has to go from the major league roster. Everybody talks about how they're bringing back the same starting nine, but maybe somebody has to go.
Over under 7.5 of the starting nine from the ALCS on the Blue Jays opening day roster in 2016.
Under.
Yeah.
Starting nine from the ALCS. So that would be Colabello.
Colabello.
Goins.
Yeah.
Tulo. Donaldson. Revere. Pilar. Jose Bautista. Edwin Encarnacion. Russell Martin.
Yeah.
I think under.
Under. Yeah. Interesting. I mean, you could make it. You could see a scenario where they're all back.
Right.
Yeah.
You made the case on sports.ca the other day that kind of a covert move the Blue Jays might want to make is to add a left-handed power bat at first base.
Oh, man. Balance out that lineup a little bit. So tell me, am I reading between the lines too much here? Did you get the sense yesterday that Anthopoulos kind of wants to add a lefty bat?
I mean, he noted that that was an area where they could have improved this year, where they could have been better. But then he also said, look, there isn't a third baseman who hits left that I like more than Josh Donaldson. There isn't a shortstop I like more than Troy Tulowitzki. There isn't a right fielder I like more than Jose Bautista.
Maybe this is like me pushing my agenda because I think they could use a left-handed bat.
You and your agenda, Ben.
Yeah, I know. But I got the sense that they kind of would want one. And you look at free agency, man, you have guys like Alex Gordon, you have Jason Hayward, you have Chris Davis.
Yeah.
There are some pretty legitimately good left-handed hitters out there. Two-way players, too. You know, these guys are athletes. They can add some value on defense. That's clearly a priority for these Blue Jays. It would be expensive, but I wonder.
That's the thing. Can you spend that money on a left-handed bat on the open market when you need pitching as badly as the Blue Jays do?
Well, I would have wondered about that, and I still do. But we've seen them go out and add bats to the best offense in baseball this summer with Tulowitzki.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
They also add a price, of course.
But then that also, you know, point to that is that they're deep enough offense. They're already the best offensive team in the majors.
Like, hey man, there's no such thing as too many runs. Honestly, there's no such thing. I think they should be looking to upgrade the offense this year.
Right.
I mean, I know they have a great offense and they're going to get Devin Travis back and all this stuff, but of course they should look to upgrade the offense.
Interesting. It'll be interesting how it shakes out. Maybe there's a spot there, but maybe, you know, Justin Smoke and Chris Colabello, who you could bring both of them back next year. Pretty nice little platoon. Those two guys combined for 30 some homers, you know, like they worked pretty well together. Decent, you know, Colabello showed you something with the glove at first in the playoffs, I think, that people didn't realize was there. Justin Smoke's defense, obviously good, you know, like those, that worked.
Yeah.
And that was cost effective. And you put those two guys together and they're, you know, almost Chris Davis.
Are they though?
Almost. You put them together.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
They certainly don't strike out as much. You know, Chris Davis, how many homers did he hit this year? 45 or something like that? 42?
He hit 47 homers.
47. And those two guys together were probably like 33 to 35,
I'd say. They were 33.
Almost. For a fraction of what he's going to cost.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
Maybe, you know, they don't have the lineup presence of Chris Davis or whatever, right? But
yeah. No, for sure. For sure. And I think that's a great fallback. I mean, if you go to Smoke and Colabello next year, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But I do wonder if they might find a way to find a left-handed hitter for that batting order.
What everyone wants to know is Munenori Kawasaki going to be back?
It's a big question.
That's what's on everybody's mind.
It's a big question.
Is what's going to happen there?
Yeah.
Lots to do for the Blue Jays this offseason. I think we've rambled on about it long enough. We're going to step away and come back for very, very quick and tidy third segment after this on At the Letters.
You know, I don't know what happens, but I mean, I don't see the team changing in a lot of ways. I'm sure there'll be some additions, some subtractions, just to, you know, you always have to move forward a little bit, but you know, the core group, they get, and all those guys, we all got a taste of it too, and that could do wonders for you too, you know, going into an off season and looking forward to the following year. So, the state of the union is great, I think.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith. We're going to wrap this thing up. We just want to take a quick second to acknowledge and thank and share our gratitude to all the listeners who came along with us on this, the debut season of At the Letters. Kind of feels like this is our kind of season finale before we start anew again. I feel like we call this a wrap on season one.
Yeah.
Felt pretty good about it. Thank you to everybody who listened.
Oh, man. Obviously. Huge thanks to everyone who listened. It's... Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun doing this. I think we both enjoyed it. And I mean, just the fact that, you know, we've been able to talk baseball and that people have been listening is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, thank you to everybody that said something nice on Twitter.
Yep.
Thank you to all the guests,
you know,
everybody from, you know, Shy to Wilner, you know, Brunt, Blair, who else? We had Jonah Carey, Devin Travis, Michael Saunders, Dan Norris. You know, Jeff Wilson, Andy McCullough, I don't know who else, Mike Cazisa, Jim Callis, I mean, Ben Badler. Who's that?
Alex Spear,
Ben Badler. I mean, we had a lot of good guests.
Yeah, we did.
Felt good about that.
Yeah, it was great. It was, I think, a lot of fun. And the good thing is, it's not like we're going to be disappearing.
No. As far as, you know, the what we're going to do this off season, I think we'll basically play it by ear. If nothing's happening, we're probably not going to do one because we're not going to, you know, just kind of waste space and fill time. We ain't about that. But if something does happen, and let's be honest, it's Toronto Blue Jays, something's probably going to happen every friggin' week, we will be here to talk about it.
Yeah.
I was just saying to you, like, you know, for a team that like almost got to the World Series, there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah. You can't just sit back and rest. You know, I get the sense that in hockey, after the free agent burst, GMs kind of go to the cottage, but there will be no cottaging for Alex Anthopoulos.
Hockey, like they just got it figured out. They got everything done quick. Like everything happens right away. And then everyone just like frigs off to Muskoka and like has a good time.
They got everything except a good tailgate.
That's true. No tailgate like there was in KC. You know, hey, thanks for listening. Honestly, it was good. It was fun. It was cool. I don't know. We'll take a step away. Like, what are you going to do now that you don't have baseball? Like,
I always have baseball. it'll be off season stuff. Once that picks, it'll be, you know, World Series is a little bit of a lull.
Right.
And you know,
what are you? I just gave you an opportunity to tell people that just do something that's not baseball. Like what?
Oh, what do I do that's not baseball?
Yeah,
I see.
Take a step away.
Hopefully I'll start getting in shape after a month of eating some not so healthy meals.
I'm going on a little health stint for sure.
A little cleanse.
Not right away.
Oh, man.
Not right away. The next 2 weeks will probably be pretty bad. But I after that I'm gonna go on a little like health kick and just so I can look at myself in the mirror again. Like, Jesus.
Not the healthiest month. God. Let's put it that way.
But you were fine. Like, you're a vegetarian. So you were fine.
It doesn't
like,
mean I eat healthy. The amount of sodium I consume could probably power some, I don't know what sodium power. I ate a lot of unhealthy stuff. Let's put it that way.
All those salt powered things.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there was some unhealthy eating. Absolutely. Oh my God.
That's for sure.
A lot of beer, a lot of like crap food, a lot of like long hours. And you're not sleeping and you're not like, you know, you're not exercising. You're not doing this. It's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's bad.
But you guys stuck with us. So thanks for listening.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks for coming along. We'll be here periodically. You'll know when we're here. Get at us on Twitter.
Yeah.
And
we have some pitch talks coming up as well.
Yes, we do. I almost forgot about that. Pitch talks. November 10th, I want to say. That's the Montreal one. Then November 12th in Toronto. Let me just like bring it up right now, actually, so I don't screw this up. Word to Kevin Kennedy, who is the man and has put these things together. Yeah, November 10th in Montreal. I'll be at that one. Ben will not. And then November 12th, 918 Bathurst Center for Culture. November 12th, 7 o'clock p.m. Me and Ben will be recording a podcast. Who else we got on this? Jonah Carey will be there, former ATL guest. Stephen Brunt, former ATL guest, will be there. Sid Sixero, who is always worth the price of admission. And then presenting an illustrated history of Toronto baseball, Adam Bunch of spacing.com. I certainly wouldn't want to miss that. So tickets are $20, pitchtalksbaseball.com.
check them out. And there might be some other Pitch Talks events coming up in the future, although I'm not sure they have been announced, so I will not say anything of them. Ben, do you have a World Series prediction?
Casey Royals, seven games.
Seven games, yeah. Eh?
How about you?
What makes you think it's going to go the distance?
I don't know. I'm just picking seven because I want to give the Mets a nod to being quite a good team.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Mets are such a good team that I think they're going to win the World Series.
Wow.
I think they're going to win the World Series in six games.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Huh.
Yeah.
The Royals didn't impress you enough?
Oh, no. No, they're good. Yeah, they're good. I feel like the Royals have been so good, they're due to just kind of come back down to earth a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, is Alcides Escobar really going to, like, hit 2 million for the playoffs,
right? How did that happen? Alex Rios is an 875 OPS in the playoffs.
Right? Like, you know, are some of those things going to... And, you know, of course, like, Mike Moustakas probably hasn't been, you know, as good as he could be. Alex Gordon hasn't been as good as he could be. I don't trust Johnny Cueto at all. Enson Volquez, I don't think, is going to be able to, you know, be throwing 98 throughout this postseason like he has been. You know, Neddy Yost has not managed his bullpen particularly well.
No.
So, you're not that, you know, Terry Collins is known to be, you know, the most cerebral manager either, but yeah, I think Mets at six.
Yeah, that's fair.
Why not?
Yeah.
You know, JP Ricciardi gets his ring, you know?
Yeah. John Gibbons has connections on both sides, eh? Because he coached under Yost and he played under Terry Collins. And of course, he knows Ricciardi from the Mets as well.
And yeah, well, and Gibby played for the Mets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Played for the Mets and coached with the Royals. He knows a lot of the Royals players.
Yeah. They showed a clip on one of the broadcasts. Remember that? And it was playing in the press box. And I was like, holy, is that Gibby? Like,
yeah. The young John Gibbons.
Oh, my God. Young John Gibbons. That would have been, if I could do a Sportsnet magazine story at any point in time, it might be like charting the rise of a young John Gibbons.
What do you mean charting the rise?
As in just like when he got his bonus and blew it on a sports car.
Oh,
just like the life
I
that he
see.
Was living.
Like go back in time.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Man, that'd be great.
Yeah, if I could time travel back.
Cover story.
That. And like, yeah, just be like embedded with like, just follow John Gibbons around for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, we can do the, maybe you can do the follow-up version of that story.
Oh, he's the best. I was in KC, was Shy. This was the day after you had left. I just messaged you in the lobby. Me and Shy went for lunch. We ran into Gibby and his wife. And they were just like, hey, what's going on? Like, and it was so weird that like we just kind of reflected on how like we don't have, like there's no game to go to tonight, right? Like it's, you're so immersed in it. It's so like every day. And then all of a sudden it's just like, what do we do now? Him and his wife were just like going to a movie. It was seriously, it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They didn't know what else, like he didn't know what to do with himself. So they were like, yeah, I guess we're going to go to a movie.
Wow. Guess we're seeing a movie.
It was bizarre. I didn't ask what movie. I should ask.
Yeah. I think I would like to know.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched American Sniper on the plane. I think Gibby would be an American Sniper guy.
Yeah.
That's some hardcore American propaganda.
Is that a date movie though?
Some hardcore propaganda there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was for real. Cool. Hey, anything else to add on this, the final episode of ATL for the season?
Don't stop hitting refresh on sportsnet.ca.
I wouldn't do that. Yeah. That's right. That will be your source, your destination for all things Blue Jays throughout this eventful offseason.
Yeah.
We'll have everything. Me, you, Shy, Jeff Blair, Grange has been writing some good stuff. Lots of good stuff up there.
Yeah. No, we might not have, you know, the lineup of 9, 10, 11 writers that we had during the postseason, but we'll have a lot of stuff.
Let me tell you something. Nobody covered this postseason like we did. Seriously.
I thought there was good stuff.
Nobody touched us. Like, it was insane.
I was pleased with it. Thought it was good stuff. You had some good stuff.
Yeah, man.
A Tulo piece, man. Check it out if you haven't checked it out. Arden's piece on Tulo is definitely worth a read.
Yeah. Troy Tulowitzki after everybody else had emptied out of the clubhouse, he talked to me and like pretty opened up about some stuff, man. Like he got into it. We should have talked about that today. Maybe we'll talk about it in the next one or something.
One of the filler podcasts.
This is
only podcasts with true material.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in another day. Sam McKee is pacing and he's giving me the wrap it up. He's probably been giving me the wrap it up for about 10 minutes and I've just been ignoring him. Thanks to Sam McKee for producing the podcast at Sam_Alton_McKee on Twitter. Give him a follow and send your complaints to him. I'm at Arden Swelling on Twitter. Ben is at B. Nicholson Smith on Twitter. We are on sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. Thank you so much for listening throughout the season and for listening today to At The Letters.